Hi, folks. Welcome to Monday's iWrite Radio podcast stroke videocast. We're going to cover a couple of things today. I think we have to go back to the Labour Party and the various statements that have come out over the weekend. We've got a new Facebook page, which Jimmy found for us, which is associated with Peter A. Bell. I think we'll try and get Peter on to tell us in his own words, but I think we should mention it. White Rose Rising. We've got more detail of the poll results from Scott Goes Pop. That was both in the National and the Herald ran a piece referring to the National as its sister paper. And then we've got the rather interesting, what should we say, rearrangement of street furniture down in Bristol. We'll have a chat about that. Well, let's kick off with Ruth Wishart. I think I'll start by sharing the screen with you and give you the quote. On Saturday, after a lengthy meeting of its Scottish executive, it issued a detailed statement. This is the Labour Party. Statement of intent and belief, which elevated contradictory prose to new levels of incredulity. Here's a flavour. Scottish Labour is committed to Scotland remaining in the UK. But, if you please, another quote, Scottish Labour is neither a nationalist nor a unionist party. Or this, it is the sovereign right of the people to determine their future and the right of the people of Scotland to determine the form of government suited to their needs. But it is clear that the people are neither demanding a second referendum nor independence. Now, if you wanted to pick a form of words to sow confusion and to fence it, as we said yesterday, on several fences, you could do little better than an official statement like that from the Labour Party.
Somebody's on drugs.
I think Jimmy's point is that he made yesterday is really relevant to this. I think they're so divided within their own ranks that they have to be all things to all people.
Aye, and they can only put out nonsense statements like that because of the division.
Well, Ruth Wishart absolutely eviscerates them.
Good on her.
How they can take any, how they can expect to be treated seriously on any of the positions they've taken. You know, I mean, if somebody gets interviewed, if Jackie Bailey gets interviewed, it's not going to be the same answer she gives if Ian Murray got interviewed and then Richard Leonard. It's an lack of awareness.
Don't forget, the latest poll has elevated Ian Murray to a unique position in Scotland. He's likely to be the only non-SNP MP sitting at Westminster, according to the latest poll.
Well, if he carries on the way he is, I think he's on a shuggly peg. Jimmy?
I was just going to say, I'm not surprised that the polls have the Tories plummeting, given how they've basically sold the farmers and the fishermen, who are their core vote in Scotland. They've completely sold them out over the last few weeks. I'd be surprised. I think Ian Murray might lose his seat if there were a general election. He's probably quite delighted that he's got 4.5 years in that seat without having to worry about a general election.
He certainly seems to have become... What would you say? I mean, he is the single MP Labour Party spokesman in Scotland.
But he seems to have decided
to lead the fight against the SNP at Holyrood.
He seems to have been making a play for Ruthie's position as arch-unionist, because Jackson Carroll is so ineffectual in that role, as he's ineffectual in any role, that Ian Murray seems to have decided that he's going to be the media darling and the arch-unionist. Well, look, and I'm not surprised, mate. Let's be honest. Apparently, I'm not certain of this. I'll put a caveat on that. But he did apparently get a nice big wedge of cash from a particular care homeowner to help his re-election last year. And I think unionist cash is very important to Mr. Murray.
Well, the question's got to be asked. It's a straightforward question. All the polls have been showing, ever since 2014 in the independence referendum, that a third of Labour voters will vote for independence. And that hasn't changed, has it? So it's why? And why on earth do they ignore that whole one third of their potential voters?
I would like to say it's a point of principle, but I don't think it is a point of principle.
No, I don't think it is either.
I actually think they believe they can take Tory votes.
I think a lot of these people in the Labour Party look to themselves and look to protect their position. And if a third of their support supports independence, two-thirds don't. And they want those two-thirds to keep backing them so that they stay as candidates, so that they stay with paid positions within the Labour Party. I think a lot of the Labour people are protecting themselves and not considering their voters or the people of Scotland.
Well, look, Norrie's right. After all, Ian Murray, as far as we know, sits as a Labour Party, the only Labour, sorry, a Labour MP, the only Labour MP in Scotland, because of transferred Tory voters in Morningside.
Mm-hmm. I'm not. I have my doubts about that, Stuart, because there's a big working class chunk in his constituency.
All right. So why do the working classes in Edinburgh, are they unique to the rest of Scotland? Why do
I don't, Stuart? I don't know. I mean, our other Labour Party man regularly tells me he's a fantastic MP. There's a constituency MP does a great job, and I'm prepared to believe that. I'm more interested in how they've gamed this out. What their strategy here is, I think they think that the Tories are looking so bad at Westminster that they can get crossover votes from the Tories back to the Labour Party. And I'm saying back to the Labour Party because I think there's a fair chunk of unionist Labour voters, past Labour voters, who voted Tory this time round.
What about?
I think they believe if they take a hard stance on the union, they'll win back voters. Unfortunately, their idea of a hard stance is like a marshmallow thrown into a fire.
Yeah, but look, the other question that has to be asked is this: don't forget that the Labour Party in London are still looking for a number of Labour MPs from Scotland. Otherwise, they've got no chance of ever going back into government. How the hell are they going to get that?
But that's not true either. They don't need the Labour Party in Scotland.
They think they do. There's a difference between what we know and what they think they know.
Well, I'll tell you, they must have some very stupid people working for them.
That's obvious. Sorry.
Because it's very obvious when you look at this statistical analysis of past voting patterns that they don't need Scotland. And no, I think that's a problem for Scottish Labour.
Well, there's a bit of a difference between needing Scotland and benefiting from some Scottish MPs. It does help them down south.
What they need to do is get their finger out in England. They need to win in England. If they don't win in England, they don't get power. Mm. What part of that is difficult to understand? it's completely nuts.
Like, I think we need to mention before you move on simply the other side of the coin of this poll. That means of the 59 MPs that Scotland could send to Westminster at the next election, 58 of them will be SNP.
And it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference.
But no, I have to tell you, Stuart, my unionist helper who's whispering from the back cupboard in my ears going, but it won't constitute a mandate.
Right.
Well, I think we need to move on to the next topic then, eh?
Which is, of course, the actual polling. Quite incredible. Given now that we're looking at the in-depth part of it, what for Holyrood, it's what, 70 seats? Mm-hmm. An outright majority on that poll for the SNP without the Greens.
And it links through to the one person that seems to be leading the charge at the moment, Peter A. Bell, who we'll come to what he's just launched his latest page on Facebook. I mean, it is fascinating. Things are changing. I feel the ground rattling a wee bit under my feet.
The other part of that, of Ruth Wishart's piece, mentioned the possibility of the List independent supporting party. And she wasn't poo-pooing it. She was saying that that could rattle the opposition parties at Holyrood in another way. They could lose even more seats. Whereas Peter Abel's piece today is supporting 100% independence vote for the SNP.
So he'd be still supporting both votes SNP in the Holyrood election.
Which yeah, I think always been Peter's position.
It has always been his position, aye. I prefer a more nuanced look at it in that in areas like central Scotland where the SNP are going to absolutely sweep the board for most seats. I don't have a problem if people choose to vote Green or maybe vote for this pro-Indy alliance if it appears. I'm quite happy to see List seats going to independence supporting parties as well. I do have a slight issue with the thing that a lot of people seem to want 70 or 80% of seats in Holyrood on 53 or 54% of the vote. That kind of bugs me a bit. It's not very democratic. I can understand why they want that level of support in Holyrood to pressure the SNP. But it sticks in my craw a wee bit. It feels a wee bit like fixing things a wee bit too much.
I do. Well, I kind of had that view running about my skull for a wee while. But then the Holyrood voting system was not set up to guarantee a democratic mandate for the government. It was set up to stop the SNP.
Yeah.
You know, well, look. So if they want to manipulate the system to stop the SNP, why can't we manipulate the system for independence?
Well, I was just going to ask that same question, but the other way around. If they can get it wrong when they planned the De Hont system for us, our behavioural scientists could get it wrong. Us trying to come up with a List party. You know, these behavioural scientists, I'm a behavioural scientist. My God, sometimes you just might as well toss a coin.
I do. I would have to see some really robust figures before I moved my second vote.
Yeah, I'd have to see it. I want to see candidates. I want to see policies. I want to see manifestos, mate, because having looked at some of them are particularly dodgy. And let's be honest, some of them are fronts for people who have been there before and desperately want to get back.
Yeah, that is another problem. They've got a bit of work to do before I even seriously consider, I was going to say voting, but they would have to be very convincing for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, I think basically they'd have to accept my manifesto.
I didn't have an issue with that, mate, because as I say, I've looked into a couple of them and a couple of them have got some dodgy skeletons rattling about their cupboard. So we'll see when their manifestos come out and their candidates appear. But right now, isn't it a joy to be looking at poll numbers that can make us consider switching our second vote?
Yes, yeah, there is that aspect to it. And I have to admit, there's part of me that would kind of like to see it happen, that you had a different party to give your List vote to, if only to turn round to the Conservatives, the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats to say, you try to gerrymander the system, we just gerrymandered you right back.
And wouldn't it be nice to see the likes of Annie Wells going back to work in Marks and Spencer's, Murdo Fraser being a caddy on a golf course, because that's about all he's really good for.
Well, look, I'd like to return to them at the point I said, like, the ground does seem to be shifting. It's a wee bit wobbly underneath my feet. It really is. You've got Peter Bell, who he's writing every day at the moment. God knows what else he's doing. Sometimes he writes twice a day. But he did attack the people that suggested that waiting for the unionists to make a mess of it is not a good policy if we were going to get independence. But there's no getting away from it. One of the strongest arguments at the referendum in 2014 was, look at our broad shoulders, your pension's safe with us. There's a lot of people that voted no that just kind of believe that, oh, if things go wrong, we need England there to stop us falling off the cliff. Now, the current behaviour of this government throughout the Brexit stuff, and now we've got the virus stuff, has obviously destroyed that idea. That argument's gone.
Aye, they've been absolutely ludicrously inept. It has kind of helped that the Tories, well, they stepped up their campaign of self-destruction. I know they've just won an election in that, but they've won that election by settling a 40-year-old argument within the Tory party and settling it in the wrong manner as far as most of the country's concerned. We've now got kind of extreme right-wing leadership pretending to be acceptable, the acceptable face of fascism almost. But we've also got remarkably inept leadership. We've got a health secretary who lies. In fact, we've got a cabinet that lies. But it's interesting the Tories called for the resignation of the Scottish health secretary this morning without in any way having a hint of hypocrisy, given the way that they back Matt Hancock.
I think we can come to there at the end, shall we?
Don't do as I say, Springsteen.
Aye. But I mean, come on, guys. The one thing he's got right during this is designing a bloody badge for NHS punters that work within the NHS to buy so that they can wear it on their lapel. That's the only thing he's actually done efficiently.
Jimmy's absolutely right, because what I'm trying to point to is it's the one thing that any government of any colour, extreme right, extreme left, they've got to be competent. They've got to protect the people one way or another. You know, I've spoken before about the very thin line between a legitimate government and a gang.
Guys, I'm sorry. 2014 was a dry run for Brexit. Brexit is a dry run for the next independence referendum. The lies that will be told and supported in support of the union will be numerous and vast.
Oh, absolutely.
Name one newspaper, one TV station.
Nori, you're stealing my arguments. It's usually me that comes up with that one.
Well, I mean, have no doubt what you saw in the Brexit referendum is going to be nothing compared to what you see in the next independence referendum.
Right, but we have to be prepared to call it out every single time. We have to have... Like the Business for Scotland information, we have to have that at our fingertips and point out every single time. Your broad shoulders because you've been bloody siphoning cash out of Scotland for decades.
But we don't have the outlets to get it to the...
No, you're right. It struck me this morning. You know something else? They're proud of winning these elections. These last, you know, the referendum and now getting an 80-seat majority. They're proud. What are they proud about? Putin would be proud of winning those elections because, you know, the only reason they won those elections is because they own the media.
Why do we think Britain's any different from Putin's Russia?
That's my point.
We may have the feeling that Britain's different from Putin's Russia, but that's only because we're told that it's different.
Well, the
we still have a media that is 90% behind.
The only difference is they have to be a little bit more subtle. My sort of view of this is that we need to win the argument before the argument starts.
How do we do that?
We need the population to understand what's happening before we go into a period of campaigning.
The opposite argument, Nari.
Well, we don't have a choice because we will not have the outlets. We will not have the reach. We'll have the advantage, I would think, on the ground, boots on the ground. The Yes movement, I think, will fire up again and door knock well. But we won't have the BBC night in, night out, ITV night in, night out.
I think you're wrong there. We may have a biased BBC and a biased ITV, but they're still going to have to cover what the First Minister's got to say about the campaign.
The BBC will do what it did last time. It will no longer have balance. It will have one independence voice and four unionist voices. And they will call it balance. And they'll say, let's have every political party on.
But if we've got the boots on the ground, let's go and pick it every time. If they have a leaders' debate and they've got four unionist voices against one independence voice, then let's go and bloody tear the bloody studio down. Let's not let them have that debate. Let's cave in the studio, go in there, rip their equipment apart. They're going to be that biased.
You know, this has been the topic this morning, I must admit. I was talking, obviously, when they pulled a statue of a slave owner in Bristol off its pedestal and chucked it in the canal, and what that raised up. And I pointed out to people, to friends in Bristol, that you know, young people these days are supine. 20 years ago, people would occupy trees just to save a wood. They wouldn't even block a bloody road. Even French farmers.
It wasn't pensioners that pulled that statue down last night, mate. It was the young people that were out protesting. Well,
but it's hardly like moving into a whole forest in the Newbury bypass and staying there for 3 years.
So you're prepared to write off a generation because they're no tree huggers like you were?
I'm not a tree hugger. I'm simply saying that
Marxists are any tree huggers, mate.
I'm waiting to see the people and the young people in this country getting off their butts and do something. You know, occupy a building, block a bridge, do something.
What do you think this weekend was all about?
Let me think. Was it the G20 where they attacked all the banks? There's been plenty of direct action, Stuart.
The problem with direct action is that in this country it's automatically decried as almost domestic terrorism because of the bias of the media. I mean, come on, they pulled down a statue yesterday. They pulled down a statue of a slaver, a statue that's had 14 campaigns raised against it to have it brought down. Each one of those campaigns ignored. They pulled down a statue and you've got the media slating them for it. And frankly, if they'd pulled down... Well, let's be honest, they defaced Winston Churchill's statue in Parliament Square last night, but they couldn't pull it down because it's bloody mass. They'd have been the enemy within again.
Jimmy, you've got me thinking about the Duke of Sutherland statue up at Helmsdale.
I'd leave it there, mate. I'd leave that there as a clarion call to the whole of Scotland to remind people. Because most people
if they knocked it that down, that would be all over Scottish news, that's for sure.
It would be mad SNP terrorists knocked down.
Right, that's what they'd be calling. As I say, mate, it doesn't take much to be called the enemy within in this country.
And they'd be interviewing the direct descendants of the sheep that replaced the people he did.
Yeah, I know. I'm not serious, and you can have your sheep.
I am, mate. I'd love to get into St Andrew's Square and take down Henry Dundas's statue.
It's a bit high. I'm no longer.
It is a bit high, mate. But if I strapped myself to the column, I reckon me and Ricardo with a couple of sledgehammers, it would only take a couple of hours.
Chain yourself to it. Fall on top of Ricardo, though.
As long as it's not falling on top of me, I'm fine with that, mate.
I'm of the other school. I think it should stay there. And I think it should be a big sign on it detailing exactly how he made his money.
Well, that's worked in quite a few cities around the country. In fact, not just.
And there should be school trips to St Andrew's Square every year, so that they can see what the new town was actually built on.
Well, if there was a bit more, I mean, do local councils not have the power to rename streets? You know, there's quite a lot of union streets around.
Yeah, there's a lot in Edinburgh particularly.
Every street called Union Street should have a pair of handcuffs attached to the sign.
And Dundas Street should just be replaced with a big, huge bum, a big mass, kind of like they get underbelly. I've got that big upside down purple coup. A big cute bum at the bottom of the street because Dundas was the biggest arsehole in the empire.
I was thinking more of the one in the Billy Connolly joke where the guy buried his dead wife in the back garden.
That's not a bad idea, actually. A couple of wee bronze bums for people to park their bikes at the moment. Yeah.
This is awful.
We do have a problem with that, because most of the streets with the names of the great and the good, I'm quite sure in their history we'll find something bad.
Well,
the Bruce was fighting for the English at one time, you know.
And he did murder someone on consecrated ground, after all.
Oh, wow, there you go.
I don't have a problem with that. Well, the murder, maybe, but where he did it doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. Okay, guys, okay.
Right, let's...
Enough hilarity. Anything to finish with?
I think we've got to cover the fact that the First Minister had a very good press conference this morning. She got challenged by the journalist for the Express, the Daily Express. Just a moment. My mother's best friend read the Daily Express all her life. When my mother fell ill and died, she was staying with her best friend. And we always used to just shake our heads, because my mother was an SNP supporter all her life, and we just could never understand how they could talk to each other. Anyway, Tom Martin, the Daily Express, asked a stupid question about shielded letters. Apparently, if you're shielding, that's a serious issue, but that's another day. Shielded letters, one of them had a wrong date on them, and an administrative error. My God, did the First Minister turn around and scalp his bottom? She said, I don't normally like to make things, talk about things, political things, but basically Tom Martin had said the Tories had called out for the Health Minister to be sacked. And the First Minister said the Tories are disgraceful. They're talking party politics. They're undermining the Health Secretary. Says more about them than us, and they should be ashamed of themselves. And she couldn't be more direct than that, could you?
I have to tell you, every time either one of you mentioned Slaver, Jackson Carlo's picture popped into my head.
Well, that's the thing, somebody who transported slaves is effectively a slaver, but in Scotland it has far more entertaining connotations, doesn't it?
Well, it's about running off at the mouth, that way.
I did like Nicola's comment about the Tories. I think they are the hypocrisy of being a Scottish Tory. I mean, the actual term Scottish Tory is almost oxymoronic, but it is riven with hypocrisy. And come on, that's another reason for getting rid of them on the list. Let's get rid of Annie Wells and Murdo Fraser. If you're going to have vote for Tories, at least vote for Tories that have got something to see.
I've been banging on about it for about 2 weeks, saying that we're back to politics as normal. Mm-hmm. The Tories have been back to politics as normal for a month, and it's self-defense, because they're terrified, as I say, one, of care homes being nationalized, because their subsidy from care home owners will dry up, and terrified that the Scottish government at the end of all this has done a better job than the Westminster government. Mm-hmm. And if all that comes out and proves to be true, Jackson and Murdo and Annie Wells are for the scrap heap.
Aye.
Particularly bad leader, though, Carlo.
Aye. He's not got a backbone. He's kind of slid into that position by being made temporary leader when Ruthie decided to do a bolt sharpish. But he's not got a history of actually supporting any policies and standing behind them or promoting any policies either.
You think Ruthie might change her mind and just sit there in Edinburgh Central?
Or just
go for a list one, just sit in the back benches and collect the money?
She's going full on Tory. She's heading for the House of Lords on 300 quid a day, and she'll be sitting on half a dozen boards, making another couple of hundred thousand a year at least.
Yeah, oh, easy, right. Well, there's an easy 500,000, 750,000 for her in London without having any scrutiny whatsoever. And so that's where she's going.
And she's got to think of her child's eating education.
Oh, absolutely. She's made far better her working down in London as Lady.
Can you imagine how much you'll get paid for after dinner speaking?
She'd load me. And then if she's that good at it,
twice the national wage for each appearance.
And if she's any good at it, mate, they'll parachute her into a safe seat and have her a cabinet post. They wouldn't need to if she's in the lodge right now.
That's the other option that we haven't considered, that she's retiring from Holyrood to become the Scottish MP for Essex and the new Scottish colonial master.
Can I just say that, just to finish on Nicholas Press of the day, I seen the whole thing as I thought she was very strong today, but it's an affirmation. She was basically saying to the people of Scotland, look, we are doing this right. Thanks to the help that you've given us, the numbers are going in the right direction. Stick with it. And come on, we're all looking at the border with a bit of trepidation because the numbers in England aren't going in the right direction. The north of England at the moment, northwest England and northeast England, they border Scotland. We've got things working quite well here. And just as an example, our health minister has created a track and trace system that started on the 1st of June when she said it would start. And it's actually working as far as we can tell at the moment. The English system that they said would start on the 1st of June, they've now let that timeline slide to September. Stick with it, people. We're actually getting somewhere.
By the way, guys, if any of you come across any expertise in the track and tracing, try and get in contact with them, because I'd really like to get somebody on who could explain the difficulties or the ease of putting it all together. Because none of the journalists have done anything about it that I can find.
Well, as far as we know, it's not rocket science. They've been doing it for 30 or 40 years.
I think the expansion of it might have been a lot more difficult than it looks on paper. But I'd really like somebody who knows what they're talking about without an axe to grind, not a political person, just an expert in that field.
Aye, somebody that works in that field.
That we could maybe ask a few questions of.
I'll ask about, I know a couple of people that may know somebody that's working in it at the moment.
I think that would be useful for the listeners. Mm-hmm. Anything to finish with?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps I should apologise for misinforming the public about the situation in Australia. What do you think?
We were going to come round and beat you with big sticks, but if you're prepared to apologise, we'll let you off. And I don't want a Dominic Cummings type apology.
No, it's okay. I got one or two things wrong. Anyway, it was my son's decision to get tested, not the company that he worked for. You've just phoned up to a hotline, went along, got tested, and it's totally free.
Okay, because we were questioning whether he was kind of pushed into it by his and whether they had to pay for it.
Oh, he did say to me at the time that he would have been sent home anyway.
It's nice to know that they've got a robust, solid system in Australia.
Well, he said Australia's not one place. Victoria can be very different from the federal.
Yeah, and various states have closed their borders to other states in Australia.
Well, in fact, I'm hot off the press, I was speaking to our local MP the other day, and she was telling that Western Australia alone has been divided up into 9 distinct regions, and any one of those regions could be locked down on its own.
She's a Perth party, isn't she? She comes from Perth, Deirdre Brock.
Is she? I thought, but anyway, she became famous in Victoria. Yeah. Take the High Road, is it? No, that's Scottish.
No, it was Neighbours.
No, the other one on the beach.
She was in
the country doctor. She was in the country doctor one.
Was she? Jeez,
I didn't know she was in an Australian soap. I thought she had a decent past.
She's got a cracking singing voice as well, boys. If you're ever at a burnt supper, don't groan when she gets up because she can do the job.
Okay, I like that.
And on that cheery note, you've got me thinking about burnt suppers and spirits.
Aye, well, just you calm yourself on the spirit score. Right, thank you, Jimmy Hutton and Stuart Lockhead, for turning up and discussing things with us. And thanks for listening, folks. We'll catch up with you tomorrow, which I think's Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I'm having problems working out my days of the week at the moment. So we'll catch you tomorrow. Thank you.